Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here once again for your WWE SmackDown audio review. Jake and I get together every Saturday and produce this audio, all access to all of the readers of .net. But, of course, as I say every week, our .net members get access to a ton of other audio, usually about 6 hours or more every week of audio for the site. Take a pal to the WWE audio review on Monday nights. Bill Pruitt comes along usually on Friday afternoons and does a TNA Impact Wrestling audio review. Jake and Will get together every Wednesday for the .net countdown where they look at the best and the worst of professional wrestling each week. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio on Fridays where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. And, of course, every Thursday, Jason and I get together for our flagship show. We call it .net Weekly. We look at all the news of the week, often great news that hasn't made its way to the site yet. Spend a lot of time talking about different aspects. And as one of our members pointed out, we actually spent 30 minutes this week talking about the Divas, which is probably more than the WWE spends in a week talking about the Divas. But we talk about their new show that's coming to E-Television and a bunch of other topics this week. And, of course, all the previous audio that's been done for the site is available in our archive section. There's interviews there with Chris Jericho, Brock Lesnar, former WWE creative team members, Court Bauer, former creative team member Seth Mates joined Jason and I over after WrestleMania for our WrestleMania audio review. Ton of stuff all on the site, all the old countdowns, all the old .net weeklies, everything that you can check out. Not to mention, besides getting access to all of that audio, you get access to the ad-free version of the site, the .net member forum, and the .net member blog section. To become a .net member today, just head on over to ProWrestling.net and click on the .net member sign-up link. $7.50 a month gets you started. We do have discounts for the 6-month and the 12-month period. So sign up now to become a .net member and get access to all of that audio. Once you do, don't forget to go through the second and separate sign-up process for the .net member forum. You can use the same username and password if you like, or you can come up with something totally different. It's completely up to you. We've added 5 or 6 folks in the past week or so on the forum, and we're just happy to see more guys there and girls too. So we hope that you guys will become .net members, sign up, and become a member of the forum as well, and join us in our conversations. Jake, we're going to have a good conversation about SmackDown this week because I got to tell you, I was impressed with this show. It's been kind of ho-hum the past few weeks. There's been things to like, but the shows themselves have been very formulaic. They've been very house show formulaic, where the opening segment is a talking segment that sets up the main event, and it's all kind of cheesy and whatnot. And this week, they went straight to a match and ran this thing top to bottom. A lot of good wrestling on the show. I've got exceptions with a couple of little things, but all in all, I thought this was a very, very good edition of SmackDown.
Yeah, it actually really moved along at a good pace. And I enjoyed them firing off ready to do a match and kind of not looking back from there. We didn't really get any, extremely long and, patience trying promo segments where they, where they really attempt to get a lot of exposition out. And, so they avoided that. You know, I'm not a huge fan of them repeating video packages from Monday, and we did get the normal slew of those, but, for the most part, all the original content, from the SmackDown side of things, I thought was pretty good this week.
I know we have some members who wait to hear our opinion on the show before they decide if they want to watch it or not. I assume we probably have some readers as well. Over the past few weeks, my opinion has been, see this match or that match, but it's not really worth seeing the show. I think this is the first time in several weeks that I would say, no, sit through the show, and not everything on it is perfect, but what show is. But I think it's worth spending, all 2 hours or, 90 minutes, whatever it ends up being, if you can watch it with skipping the commercials. But, yeah, I think it's worth sitting through the show this week. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would sit through it, just to catch a lot of the matches in it. I mean, they had some good wrestling on this show. I mean, not all of it was, it never is, and it probably never will be, unless you're watching an expensive pay-per-view, and not even those are always perfect, but. This was a great TV show. I mean, I would recommend it if you have the free time this weekend to just sit down and watch it. I mean, obviously, I would skip through the commercials, and I might even skip through a few of the video packages. But just to catch the matches, I would sit down and pay attention.
And of course, the big news coming out of the tapings was Dean Ambrose facing Undertaker, and even though Undertaker was victorious in the match, he takes the beating from the Shield, ends up taking the triple powerbomb through the announce table to end the show. I assume this is a way to write out Undertaker going forward. They obviously can bring him back for Extreme Rules if they wanted to do something there. And that's kind of what I really liked about this, Jake, is that where they left it, if Undertaker's out for the remainder of the year and comes back again sometime around, you know, just after Rumble or whatever he shows up for his build to WrestleMania next year, this was an effective way to get him out and put some very good heat on the Shield in the process. But it's also not something that he can't recover from and show up at Extreme Rules possibly and get some revenge on the Shield or even on a Raw or something like that. So I like the ambiguity of it, but more than anything else, everything looked good. Undertaker sold for these guys. He took the beating well. He looked like a total badass. He just got overwhelmed by the numbers. They had the big spot with Roman Reigns spearing him through the barricade. And then, of course, the table spot we talked about. I really liked this. I thought they hit all the spots. Everybody came out of this looking good. Taker loses nothing. The Shield gets a big lift from beating down a guy like Undertaker, an icon like him. And, you know, they're still talking about Team Hell No. It looks like they are going to be going for those tag titles, I would guess, at Extreme Rules. And just as a quick aside real fast, I said Extreme Rules was this Sunday because I'm a moron and can't look at a calendar. I got confused on dates. It's obviously not till May. But last week I was saying Jason and I would have coverage. No coverage this Sunday because there is no pay-per-view this Sunday. But what I like about this, Jake, is they've given themselves multiple ways to go. They can come back sooner rather than later, or he can be out until WrestleMania season, and the Shield looked great. I don't think there's anything to complain about with this whole segment.
No, I don't either. Extreme Rules is on May 19th, so we have another couple weeks before that pay-per-view. But they definitely have a multitude of ways they can go here. I mean, if they want to send The Undertaker away for a while, I mean, if that is what, you know, he is slated to do, then, this is a great way to have him do that. Otherwise, they could have him come back in a couple of weeks and set up something for Extreme Rules, and I'm sure everybody would be, excited about that as well. So there's a lot of ways they can go. I like that the Shield, mentioned the tag titles and indicated that they'd be going after those, and that was their next injustice to try to reverse, so the Shield had a very good night. Ambrose actually had a fairly good match with The Undertaker. I mean, it was a brawl, but that's kind of what you'd expect those two at this point. Rollins and Reigns looked intimidating. That spear through the barricade looked fantastic. I mean, there was a lot of things that went right with that particular feud tonight. I mean, they paid a lot of attention to it, both in video packages and then in backstage promo one from the Shield. So I enjoyed most of that, and I thought everything that they did in that final match and leading into the final beatdown was pretty well perfect. I don't think they could have done it much better.
What does your gut tell you right now? Where do you think Undertaker's going to do? Do you think he comes back, Extreme Rules or before or right after? Is he back sooner rather than later, or do you think that this is the way they were able to write him off television, even if it's not till WrestleMania for some significant amount of time? So what do you think they're going to do here?
If I was hazarding a guess, I would say he's going to take some time off. I mean, he doesn't seem like he would be working any kind of regular schedule. I could see him coming back in the summer. I think the Shield are being set up here for a really, really strong, dominant run heading towards like SummerSlam. So, maybe if they want to bring The Undertaker back for a major pay-per-view to get his revenge on the Shield, I would see it happening, late summer. SummerSlam would take the place for that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought him back for Extreme Rules, but I just don't see it. That's just me. It's just an opinion.
Yeah, I think we're going to see the tag title match at Extreme Rules. I mean, I think that's probably pretty clear at this point. The question is, does Undertaker show up, get his revenge, prevent them from winning the title, just to have them win the next night on Raw, because that's something WWE likes to do. I could easily see that happening. I could easily see, like you mentioned, them waiting to come back in a few months, late summer, SummerSlam time, which is in August. That would make sense, and I could see him staying out the rest of the year. I don't really have a good feel myself either. If I had to hazard a guess, I'm guessing he's out for a while. But it's one of those things where, hey, if he shows up at Extreme Rules, there's going to be zero surprise. or I guess zero shock. Obviously, I would be surprised if he's not advertised or whatever, but no real shock from that moment because it's it makes sense to bring him back there. So, but again, good stuff from them. When we talk about, you know, not knowing where storylines are going, this is the good type of not knowing where storylines are going. There's plenty of bad types where not knowing where storylines are going, but this is one of the good ones where we have to kind of wait and see. Another storyline that I think is kind of clear where it's going, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, I think it ends up as a fatal four-way, and ultimately I think it leads to a SummerSlam match between Sheamus and Randy Orton, but the continuing feud between the four men, Sheamus, Randy Orton, Big Show, and Mark Henry, got a lot of lift this week as well. Sheamus and Big Show in a match, Mark Henry comes out, distracts Sheamus, doesn't really touch him, just comes out and makes his presence known. To distract Sheamus, leading to a Sheamus loss, and then Sheamus interfering in the Randy Orton match and kicking Mark Henry and letting and then Orton hitting a RKO on Mark Henry as well, both guys celebrating in the ring. We'll talk about the announcers, what the announcers try to do in just a second, Jake, but just quickly about these two matches themselves. A, the Sheamus and Big Show match was, again, another great match for those two. They have unbelievable chemistry in the ring together. Just about every time they go out there and it's the two of them, they impress me, and this was no difference. They went out there and had a great match. But they're doing this thing with all four guys, like it ends up with a fatal four-way. So what do you think about how they're building this right now? It's a little confusing for me because it seems to be Sheamus and Mark Henry who have the real issue. Show and Orton are kind of, you know, involved on the periphery, and I think ultimately, like I said, this leads to Sheamus and Orton. They got a lot going on here, and even though I like it as a whole, it does feel sloppy around the edges to me.
Yeah, it's a bit convoluted in that sense. I mean, they do have a lot of intertwining stories there. I mean, I guess they're operating under the assumption that Big Show and Randy Orton are still kind of working out their conflict from WrestleMania, and then Henry and Sheamus has been, built up in recent weeks, backstage attacks and whatnot. But yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's some interplay there that is quite, a little sloppy. But I liked Henry's interference leading to the knockout punch, and that knockout punch looked great on television. The announcers did their best to kind of start the sow of the tension between Orton and Sheamus. You know, after Sheamus kick on Henry. They kind of played up the fact that Orton looked a bit nonplussed. I guess they're a little upset with the fact that he caused an EQ, but Orton ended up just hitting the RKO and celebrating, so it didn't really go anywhere from there. But I guess I could see, you know, where they were going with it. And it's fine for what it is. I mean, hopefully they make it a little more clear in the coming promos for guys where they're headed.
Yeah, you mentioned the announce team, and specifically Josh Matthews. And just as a quick aside, I'm not liking the three-man booth on SmackDown. I think it's working well on Raw, but I don't think it works well on SmackDown. Josh Matthews and JBL are just constantly at each other's throats, it seems to be. It's almost like JBL's coming across as the bully in this situation, and Cole is indifferent about it, and Josh Matthews is like the little whining child there. I'm all for, you know, a good, strong, hard heel color guy ragging the basically baby face. I mean, the play-by-play guy is mostly, neutral as far as that goes. But yeah, the best play-by-play guys have baby face tendencies. And that's why the heel color commentator works so well. And so I like what they were doing together, but the three-man booth is just not clicking well on SmackDown at all. It's much, much worse than what they're getting on Raw. But Josh Matthews in particular tried to make it sound like that Randy Orton was upset, and unfortunately, Orton's facial expressions and actions in the ring did not jive with what they were saying at ringside. I know what they were trying to do. I think we both understand what they were trying to do, but did that stand out to you? I'm standing here, you know, or sitting there watching the show, and Randy Orton's celebrating, and I just didn't get the feeling from him at all that he was the least bit upset that Sheamus had caused
in
that match by DQ.
Yeah, I mean, they tried pretty hard from the announcement to try to convey that. Maybe it was done, post-show.
or they didn't have a whole lot they could work with. I don't know, but it did feel a little forced in there because Orton did not look the least bit, actually upset. And he looked at him for a brief moment, like, "What are you doing?" And then he noticed that Sheamus was, motioning for him to hit the RKO, and then he just did it and started celebrating. So yeah, it did not seem, the least bit like Orton was particularly upset, but. Maybe that's something they want to slow burn over time and they're just kind of building to it. I don't know, but the commentary didn't match what was going on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, that's my only critique of it. It's like, Kenny Orton seems upset that Mark Henry or that Sheamus called him, had him DQ'd. And I'm looking at Orton going, really? He got me? That was upset. I don't know what Randy Orton you guys are looking at, but he doesn't look upset to me. It's just a weird disconnect there. But yeah, those are the big stories coming out. There's a lot of talk about it in the show. We'll take this thing from start to finish. This was in the April 26th edition of SmackDown. It was taped on April the 23rd in London. Quickly before we go to the show, Jay, just one thing about the London crowd, both at Raw and at SmackDown. That they were the concern after the crowd in Jersey took over Raw the night after WrestleMania and kind of did their own thing. And there was the question of, Jason and I both said, I don't think this is going to continue, with the possible exception of London, that they're a wild card. Brian Fritz from Between the Ropes, who's a friend of the site, talked about that at that show in Jersey that night after Raw, that there was a huge section of English fans who were leading a lot of the chants. And plus we had seen the Fandango music reached the top 100 on the UK charts and I believe on iTunes not long after that. So they were the wild card and they loved Fandango, but they weren't the rowdy crowd that I thought they were going to be in the sense of taking things over. There was a lot to do there, or a lot for WWE to do there with obviously with editing both Raw and SmackDown being taped. We even got an email from a guy who had taken video cam, or I guess used his phone to take a video of the Chris Jericho match on Monday and showed how what on TV played out in just a matter of seconds was about 2 minutes long in the actual arena, and they just cut it that way. And I part of me wonders if the Wade Barrett match that we saw with William Regal on this show ended up being the same thing. It was a very, very short match, but I wonder if it was longer in the arena and they just cut it different for television. I don't know. But yeah, the crowd was not, like, they loved Fandango. They sang the song. They cheered for him. WWE didn't try to do anything with that. I think that was a smart thing to do. I think you just let London do what it wants to do and then you go back to the States, but he's not going to get cheered like that. But were you surprised that the London crowd did not try to take over the shows, especially considering how much they had to do with what happened at the night after WrestleMania?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's more of a function of maybe the London fans that would be willing to pay to go to New York for WrestleMania might just be a different breed than those that would just attend a local show, and there wasn't enough of a concentration of the crazy ones to set off what they saw in New Jersey, because it seemed like what they had in Jersey for that Monday following WrestleMania was just a huge collection of really hardcore wrestling fans, and maybe that just wasn't the case here. I don't know. I was expecting more of a reaction, or a different reaction from the States, but it seemed, fairly tame, I guess, from my expectations, and that might be some post-editing or something like that either. But yeah, I was surprised we didn't see more strange chants, but there were a few, and obviously the UK crowd does react differently than the Americans one do, and I think that's a good thing, really.
Such a good crowd, though, especially when TNA goes over there. They're so hot for TNA, and they were hot for this, too. It certainly helped make SmackDown move along very quickly. Let's go to the show. We opened up, of course, with the recap video. Del Rio defeating Jack Swagger last week was part of it, and, of course, the big chunk of it was Undertaker versus The Shield this week, and hyped the fact that it had been 3 years since Undertaker had appeared on SmackDown. That seems unbelievable to me that it's been that long, but 3 years since he'd been there. And we went straight to the ring from there. Lillian Garcia introduced Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter, and then Ricardo Rodriguez, who handled Del Rio's introduction. And off we went into our first match of the night, Jack Swagger defeating Alberto Del Rio in 14 minutes and 5 seconds. Excellent match on this. You have, the same reversal stuff going on at the end that we've seen. Del Rio ends up with the armbar in. But Coulter was a no DQ match. And Coulter hands Swagger a kendo stick. Swagger hits Del Rio with it a couple times and throws a ladder on top of him and hits the gut-wrench powerbomb for the win. I thought the ending was a little bit flat because it seemed just to kind of come out of nowhere. I don't know if he hit him with a kendo stick and a ladder, but, you know, it's a no DQ match. They've been hitting each other with all kinds of things already. So it, just to kind of do that and then hit the gut-wrench powerbomb and be done with it surprised me a little bit, but not, I mean, it's a minor complaint about the overall match. I thought was very good. The funniest thing to me about Swagger and Del Rio in these last two matches, these past 2 weeks, is like, when the title was on the line, when these guys were directly feuding with each other over the title, it's been terrible. Since they've moved the title away, and I realize they're still in the title scene and they're going to be in a triple threat match and whatnot, but they're not feuding directly with each other over the title like they were, just a few short weeks ago. Since they got the title out of the way, hell, it's been pretty good. The feud between these guys has been better outside of the title than with the title, and they've had better matches, too. Either one of these matches that we got both last week and this week, I would have taken it at WrestleMania over the one we got. Just an interesting observation about how the matches or the feud has gotten better once the title's gotten out of the way. But I know you like the match as well. What do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess regarding your point about the feud getting better being away from the title, I think that more has to do with the fact that they aren't concentrating on a terrible story. I mean, they're just not really focusing on what's going on in the ring. So, and I always liked what they were doing in the ring. It's just they just had such a terrible storyline heading into WrestleMania, and they couldn't abandon it. I mean, there was just no turning back. That it really affected my opinion of their feud and their match at WrestleMania. And I thought their match last week was a far superior match to the WrestleMania one. It got an extra 5 or 6 minutes, and even this one this week was longer than their WrestleMania match. So I've liked what they've done in recent weeks. I like that Del Rio won the singles match last week, and I like that the heel Swagger won the no DQ match this week. I think it sets up an interesting mismatch, or I guess you could say, heading into Extreme Rules, where I'm assuming we're going to get some kind of weird stipulation by the time we get there, and maybe the heels will have an advantage in that regard. So yeah, I like where they're going thus far. I like these matches. I think Del Rio and Swagger have good chemistry together in the ring, and this match, whether or not you thought it was the superior of their series thus far, I think I was entertained by it all the way through.
Yeah, there's a lot of, well, I mean, triple threat matches are no DQ by default. They usually don't go hardcore with them and pull chairs and stuff out, but as a rule, but I mean, they are no DQ by default. And there's, with all the managers and whatnot involved, with the three guys involved with this match, there's plenty of room for shenanigans there. So yeah, I expect something, even if they don't give it a stipulation, I do expect all kinds of crazy stuff to happen in this match. Let me ask you this though. I think we both believe that Dolph Ziggler retains at Extreme Rules. They just put the title on him. There's no reason to put the title on either one of these guys. So I think if they stay with Ziggler as champion, do you think this feud continues after that match, after Extreme Rules, or will that ultimately be the blow-off of this feud if they find something else to do with Swagger? And just as a follow-up, if that's what you think, what the hell do you do with Swagger? I mean, Del Rio's a babyface, they can do whatever, but Swagger's a particular type of heel with this, America, anti-immigrant sort of focus. They can repackage that a little bit and push it down a different route, but they don't seem interested in doing that. So do you think that's the blow off? And if so, where does Swagger go from here?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I haven't spent a ton of time thinking about it at this point, but yeah, it'll be difficult to just kind of ship him off into another feud. I mean, he lost his major opportunity at WrestleMania, and then losing the rematch or the follow-up match at Extreme Rules. I mean, it's going to be difficult to put him into a main event feud. I mean, maybe he takes a step down the card. Maybe they find him a tag partner. I don't know. It's going to be tough to discern until we see the way this plays out. But they definitely seem to, I mean, have a better opportunity with Ziggler as champion. So I'm with you. I think they stick with him, but I'm not sure what they do with Swagger at this point.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, if Ray's healthy, if Sin Cara's healthy, if either one of those guys is able to come back, I guess they can continue down that path. But I think they're done with Del Rio and Swagger. I don't think they should go back to it. I just don't, you know, if those other guys aren't healthy, I don't know where the hell you go with him from there. I mean, we don't really have any of the babyface foreign characters that jump out. I mean, are there any that you could think of? I mean, Cesaro's a heel, Barrett's a heel. Sheamus, but he's in a program with Orton. So are there any other, you know, foreign babyfaces that he could plug in with?
Nothing jumps to mind. I mean, unless they have somebody in developmental that they want to move up. I mean, and I'm not entirely familiar with. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh,
Jericho.
Developmental.
I don't know what exactly they do. I mean, I think they need to take some opportunities now. Go after Extreme Rules to get some developmental guys on the roster, just because they have. They have some gaps to fill, and they also have a lot of part-timers who are no longer going to be around. So maybe they do go that route. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens coming out of Extreme Rules with Jack Swagger. I don't know. It doesn't appear that the marijuana charge has affected him in any way. He's still in the main event segment, and I don't think there's any reason to not expect him to get de-pushed, for want of a better term, after this, but I just don't know what they do with him from here. They've kind of backed him into a corner, but we'll find out in a few weeks after Extreme Rules. From there, we went to commercial when we came back. Oksana was in the ring. Layla makes her entrance wearing the Union Jack flag as part of her outfit, was very much so the British flag, the UK flag. And she, of course, got a great reaction from the hometown crowd. She ends up defeating Oksana in our second match, 2:59. Basic Divas match, and not a whole lot to complain about here, not a whole lot to praise either. Layla got the big pop in front of her home crowd, and that seemed like this was before. She won with a roll-up, a very interesting roll-up where they kind of rolled around. There's like several reversals on the ground. It seemed like Layla was always in charge. And then ended up with Oksana's shoulders pinned to the mat while her body rested on top of Layla while Layla held her arms down. It's kind of hard to explain. You really need to see it to explain it. But, it's kind of a surprise pin. I like the way they got into it and a good win for Layla, but in front of her home crowd. But again, a meaningless match for Divas.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great for me. I mean, maybe I'm just not into either of these characters, but, Layla got the hometown reaction. I think she took the brunt of the offense for most of the match, and I think that was really the problem. I don't really like Oksana's offense. It just kind of bores me. But, when Layla was on offense, the crowd was into it, and when she got the win, they popped. So, I mean, it was average, I guess, but I don't know. I'm just not into, Oksana at this point. She's kind of a heat vacuum as far as I'm concerned.
And then after the match, they had a video package for the Total Divas reality show. I did not get to see this. I'm out of town working any shows this week, and so not able to watch on my DVR. And so I had to acquire it from on the internet. This was cut out of the version that I watched. I don't have a whole lot to say about this, but just give everybody who hasn't seen SmackDown yet what this video package was, and what do you think about Total Divas?
Yeah, I mean, the video package just kind of covered who would be on the show and showed some brief clips, I assume, of what will be, in some episodes. It was the Bella Twins and, the Funkadactyls and some, it must be some NXT women that they didn't really name. They just said they would introduce us to some new personality. To me, it looked like your standard reality show fare, even down to the contrived, personal grievances. It didn't seem like they were doing anything particularly original. They're just trying to get their female personalities out there in a different way. I mean, it'd probably be fine if you're already a reality show fan, but I don't think you're going to be necessarily attracted to the show otherwise.
Yeah, that was my question, is based on what you saw, if you take the wrestling fan out of the equation. Wrestling fans will watch it or not, based on where they, I guess, what they feel about the Divas. But for the reality fan or just the person channel surfing through e-television, if you're that guy and or girl, as the case may be, and you're surfing through when you stumble across this, just based on the little bit that you're able to see here, do you think it's enough to hook a non-wrestling fan?
It may be if you're you know, predisposed to liking reality shows. I mean, if you're a female reality show fan who watches like The Bachelorette or you know, those types of shows, you know, I could see you probably getting into something like this or Teen Mom or The Real World or any of that stuff. I mean, it just looks really similar to this. I mean, it didn't seem like they were breaking any new ground in the reality front. It just seemed like they were trying to find a different avenue to get people to understand their female personalities, because quite frankly, they don't spend any time doing it on their regular programming. So maybe this is a way to, you know, tell those stories away from, you know, their regular WWE programming, because they don't really have the time or, you know, want to put the effort in to do it on their regular shows. I don't know. But it looked like, at least somewhat, it was going to be them in character at points and out of character at points. And I couldn't quite tell where that line was just from the little previews. But there were definitely moments, you know, where they had clips where you could tell that the Bellas were in character, and other moments when they were on red carpets or something where they weren't. So I don't know how they're going to try to make that work, but it definitely looks like your standard reality show stuff.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to get home and check out my DVR and be able to see this clip for what it was. I'm interested in this. I'm not a big reality fan. My wife is, and so I'm interested in seeing if this is something she would be interested in. She's a very, very, very casual wrestling fan. She used to be a big fan, but I think I've managed to overload her with wrestling in my life, and so she's kind of gotten away from it. But so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out overall. I think this could be a good thing for them. I don't know how it'll work for crossover purposes, but I think they could probably get some eyes on this on E. I think it's a smart move. After commercial, we got replay of the Shield versus Hell No and Undertaker from Raw, and then we got another really good Shield promo, at least I thought so. Dean Ambrose, did most of the talking, said that they beat The Undertaker on Monday, but it was still an injustice that Team Hell No were the tag team champions. Rollins cut in and said that it's an injustice that The Undertaker is still walking. Ambrose said that they were going to do, or he was going to do, what no one had been able to do at 21 WrestleManias, and that was beat The Undertaker. He drove that point home a couple of times. Rollins said that he would not rest in peace, but Reigns said he would definitely believe in the Shield. I continue to like these promos. I know some people call it shaky cam and mock it and whatnot, but it's different, and we're always asking for something different in WWE. This is something different. I think all these guys, Ambrose is a great talker. Rollins is a better talker than I thought. Reigns is 15 times a talker I thought he was going to be. It doesn't mean he's a great talker, but he was the one wild card in all this. I think he delivers the lines that they ask him to deliver perfectly. He works with the muscle, the spirit, the animal. Undertaker is really where he kind of made his statement. But I like this promo.
Yeah, I did too. You know, I still, wish we would get that one promo where they just talk about what the hell justice is to them. But overall, they've really been, doing well with these backstage segments. You know, they have enough interjection from Rollins and Reigns to kind of make it seem like they're a bit of a hive mind. And, you know, they keep repeating the fact that they're the hounds of justice and they, you know, the pack mentality and everything like that. So, I mean, they're definitely sticking to, you know, that gimmick and what they've set up in themselves extremely well. So I like this promo. I like what they're doing with the Shield and Team Hell No and The Undertaker. It's been fun to watch. I mean, that's really all you can ask for from a wrestling angle.
Yeah, you're right. I've been looking for that, you know, this is what we think justice is promo. But what I like about this is that they're, you know, they used to just say injustice, 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 and be, as a rule, vague about it. At least now they're saying, this is injustice, Undertaker walking, this is injustice, Team Hell No, having the tag title still. So at least they're better defining what injustice is, even if they're not defining what justice is. So I'll take it. It's a slight improvement in that. But then, of course, Fandango made his entrance. He was with Summer Rae. She's the blonde girl that he's with. We've seen him with a couple of different brunettes, but the blonde is a NXT wrestler named Summer Rae. To me, she just reminds me a lot of Kelly in the ring, so I'm interested to see her if she ever makes her way to the main roster. London loved him. They cheered for him. They sang his music, and after commercial, he defeated Justin Gabriel at 2 minutes and 56 seconds. He hit, you've got to know that he hits his corkscrew neck breaker, but that moonlight drive is what John Morrison used to call it, as you pointed out last week. This one didn't look the same to me. Like last week, he dipped the guy and then brought him backward, you know, back onto his face. This week, the guy was bent over. He had Gabriel bent over face first, and then dropped him backwards on the back of his head, almost like a side Russian leg sweep. So don't know, you know, it looked like two different moves to me. But the only frustrating thing about this, the one point where he hit that move, and I'm like, okay, cover. No, he goes to the top rope, hits that big top rope leg drop again, which I am just not a fan of. But then Summer gets in the ring. He does his, you know his Fandango gimmick. The crowd loved this. I don't think it's going to catch on, though. I think this is just London getting it out of their system. He's going to be fine as a heel going forward. He did seem to enjoy the cheers, though, didn't he, Jake?
Yeah, he certainly did. You could see him kind of crack a smile a bit every now and then. I don't know if it's the exact same move as the Moonlight Drive. It definitely looked like it last week, but maybe I wasn't. They haven't really given it a name yet. The announcers haven't said anything.
Right.
So I'm just kind of guessing. It looked like a corkscrew neck breaker last week. It could be something else. I'm not perfect on that stuff when I'm trying to cover, but I thought the leg drop looked really bad. I don't know if you saw it the same way, but I mean he looked like he jumped a little bit too far and he landed right on Gabriel's face, and you saw the poor guy just wince. I mean it didn't look particularly good on television, but the fans were really into the match. I thought overall it was very good, and you know the hope spots that Gabriel had, they even kind of popped for. So yeah, I mean it was a good effort overall. I know that that we weren't going to see anything fantastic or different from Fandango this week because they were just trying to, keep going with the tide of that crowd. But it was still a lot of fun, and you could tell the crowd was really into the character.
Yeah, well, he had to jump a mile to get to Gabriel. I mean, he had to clear the ring just about to get to him, and you could tell he was kind of turned to one side because he knew he was having to fly hard. He didn't want to come in hard. I think he was trying to hold his leg up, and that maybe worked against him because when he hit, he crashed his leg down on top of him, and you could see, like you said, you could see Gabriel wince from that blow. I don't think it was I don't think it was too bad. I think he soared, the next day more so than anything broken or whatnot. But yeah, he had to jump a mile for that. If they're going to do that spot, they need to make sure that it's a little bit better set up, because I think that's what ultimately hurt him, was having to fly across the ring. As Fandango was climbing up, even the announce team was like, look how far away Justin Gabriel is. A good moment for him. Like I said, he seemed to love it. And it was, again, for that London crowd and how much fun they like to have and let him play it up a little bit. I think it's fine. He can come back out next week, drop a couple of heel lines in a promo, boom, they're back to booing him again, and everything's going to be fine. After commercial break, Sheamus made his ring entrance, followed by Big Show, and that led to our fourth match of the night. Big Show defeating Sheamus at 12 minutes and 11 seconds. Again, another very good match from these two guys. And the finish, I love the finish on this. Sheamus ends up on the top rope. He's going to jump off for that battering ram shoulder that he does. Mark Henry runs out and dumps the stairs over right below him. That allows Sheamus, or makes Sheamus stop and look down at him. Big Show recovers, and when Sheamus looks up, Big Show hits him with a knockout punch. Sheamus spills off the top rope into the ring. A great, great, great visual. Man, Show looked like a total badass. When Sheamus ran out later, and JBL said, I can't believe Sheamus is standing. I kind of thought the same thing from a within the storyline point of view. Because it was such a brutal-looking move at there at the end with him knocking him out and him falling off the top rope. Great visual. Big Show gets a good win. Better heat between Mark Henry and Sheamus. They continue to build that feud again. There's just a lot to like about this match and the way it played out.
Yeah, definitely. I thought the match was good. I thought the Henry interference really kind of fit in well, with the story they told. They showed the video package of Henry and Sheamus' troubles before the match while he was making his ring entrance to kind of set that up to some degree. But Big Show and Sheamus, as you mentioned before, they have good chemistry. They worked a very, good pace here. I thought both of them got in a satisfying amount of offense, and, Sheamus was in the middle of making his charge back when the interference happened. So yeah, it came off very well on television. I like where they're going with Sheamus and Henry, and I like where they're going with Big Show at this point. I think he's been, much better. Since he took on this heel role post that bad feud with Del Rio. So
I was pleased with this, and I thought it was a fun match to watch.
Yeah, definitely check this match out. It was worth it. So the finish is great. It's just a great visual, the way they set it up. Everything was right about this. After commercial break, William Regal made his entrance. You got your report that it was irreverent. Maybe we were just hearing different, but I thought he got a pretty good reaction from the crowd. Not as good as he did Monday, but I thought a pretty good reaction.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't really loud, but I could see, you know, when they panned to the crowd, there was a lot of people, like, bowing and clapping. So it just seemed to me like there was a huge level of respect there.
Yeah. And then Wade Barrett made his entrance. He got a loud reaction, but as you put it, mixed. There were some cheers from the hometown crowd. Others were booing him, as they should, because he's the heel. Barrett cut a very quick promo. He said he had heard all the stories of London's grave robberies, but he never thought they were real until today. He said Regal would come out of a crypt and he would go back to where he came from at the hands, oh my God, of the Barrett Barrage. I hope you die that. I hope he just chokes on that one day and they decide never to say it again. It's such a stupid line. And then that led to our fifth match, Wade Barrett defeating William Regal in 59 seconds. Barrett ducks a clothesline, hits a bull hammer for the win. Again, this may have been longer for the crowd. I don't know. But it didn't look like it had been cut in any way, at least to me. And, the video editors can be great, and it can be a big scam, but I was very frustrated by this. I mean, if this was longer for the crowd, that's great for the home crowd. But even as me watching on TV, knowing these guys are from London, knowing that they're in London, to go out there and give them a one-minute match with a really, short promo beforehand, it frustrated me. I thought it was disrespectful. It's almost like, oh wait, crap, we're in England. Where are the British guys? Put them in the match together and get them the hell out there. I mean, I realized it wasn't necessarily the case, but to me, that's just how it came across on television.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the editing. I mean, maybe there was something there that was cut out that we missed. I have to go back and look through the arena report to see if there was any mention of that. But it was literally, Regal hit one suplex, missed a clothesline, and then ate an elbow to the face and lights out. I mean, that was the whole match. And, just based on the reactions that both guys got, you would think the crowd would have ate up, 5-10 minutes for these guys if they wanted to give it to them. And, they had so many video packages in this show, it's like, man, couldn't you trim, one of them? Give them 3 or 4 minutes, something? I just would have wanted to see something else. It just felt like a wasted opportunity to me.
Yeah, you're right. And to back up that point, they come straight out of a one-minute match and go to a video package of Triple H and Paul Heyman. And they replayed the biggest chunk of it. They didn't go through all of Heyman's, shenanigans and antics out there. But they replayed the biggest chunk of it. And, a minute match to go right into that. Why even bother? It's so freaking frustrating to me to see how they do this. And if you read my hit list, this is my only complaint about the show. I give the show an overall hit. But this is my one real complaint. I mean, you can pick around the edges with the Divas, and there's some other things. But this is like, why? Why even do this? It looks bad on television. You go straight to this video package that gets 3 to 4 minutes. That could have been in that match. And again, we've talked about this before. I just do not believe that there are a significant number of people who are watching SmackDown who are not watching Raw. When SmackDown was on network television, you just kind of take it because there are people who do not have cable. Yes, they exist out there. And so if they get these type of video packages, or when they do these type of video packages, like on Main Event, which is on ION, which is broadcast television, that's fine. That's something totally different. But you're on SmackDown, you're on cable, it's on the same tier everywhere that USA is because they're owned by the same company. It doesn't make any sense why they continue to air giant chunks of Raw, not recap videos that have music overlaid and have effects added to build to something, just genuine full replays of moments on Raw. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and I know you agree with that.
Yeah, I really don't have a whole lot more to add to what you said. It's frustrating, for me as somebody who's a fan of the product, just through so many replays. To me, it really kills the impact of what I saw, just in the earlier part of the week. It's like, watching something again and again and again doesn't really add to it for me. I don't really pick up on any more nuances in WWE programming when I watch the replays, because there's really not a whole lot there to begin with. So I don't get it. I think, they're replaying this for an audience that isn't there.
Yeah, again, if they're doing recaps where they're adding stuff, that's a totally different argument. But, just solid replays of everything that happens, I just don't get it. after commercial, or excuse me, Randy Orton makes his entrance before commercial, and then afterwards Mark Henry's out for our sixth match of the night, Mark Henry defeating Randy Orton by DQ at 4 minutes and 49 seconds. You know, this one had good action for the short amount of time that it was out there. We've already talked about the finish on this. Sheamus slides into the ring just out of nowhere, hits the brogue kick on Mark Henry. Orton looks at him a little bit like, what are you doing? And he starts yelling at Orton and pointing at Henry. Henry stands up, takes the RKO, and then both guys celebrate. The announce team tried to put it over again as a potential problem between them, but Orton just wasn't playing along with it, with that storyline. It's kind of funny how they do when they do these double finish things. Like Mark Henry takes the bro kick and it pops right back up, you know. But it's
right,
this devastating move. So it's a little frustrating when they try to do this thing. I mean, do you think that hurts them anyway? I guess most people are going to go, and ignore that sort of thing. But it does stand out to me that the bro kick is supposed to be this devastating finisher for anybody, Big Show, Mark Henry, it doesn't matter. Yet Henry takes it, lays on the ground for maybe a second, pops right back up to take the RKO. It seems to diminish Sheamus' bro kick there a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, just a bit. I don't know, you know, obviously the effectiveness of finishers varies based on what kind of story they're trying to tell in the ring. So,
right.
I mean, we see this all the time with other finishers, too, where somebody will kick out a three or four of them in a match, you know, looking at you, The Rock and John Cena, but you know, they definitely do call into question, you know, their consistency on the whole finisher thing. You know, normally it's like, oh man, this is so devastating, you can end the match at any time, but here, you know, at various times you got to hit it four or five times before a guy will stay down. So I don't know, maybe they could use a little bit more consistency on that front, but I don't think we're going to get it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this goes, though, over the next couple of weeks, how they try to build tension between Sheamus and Randy Orton. It's, you know, they've hinted at it and been all around the edges, but it's not really been something they've played up. I think that's been good, the way they've just kind of teased it and whatnot, but WWE tends to jump the shark sometimes, and or not jump the shark, but just skip seven steps, and they're teasing it, and then next week they hate each other. So I want to see this play out in a logical, rational progression and build to a big moment. I think there's a lot of money in Sheamus versus Randy Orton if it's booked correctly. And, you know, this is just one of the things they can do to add on to that video package that one day they'll put together to try to sell it. So interesting to see where it goes from there. We got the Raw Rebound video, which at least was, you know, what I talked about at least was a doctored and gimmicked video. They, you know, cut pieces together and put stuff overlaid, but still an incredibly, incredibly long Raw Rebound video to recap everything that happened. I think we could have done without any of the Mick Foley stuff on the replay. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I don't know what it really added there. I thought that promo was terrible.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's like, okay, they did what they did, but the story is John Cena and Ryback, maybe show a second of Foley to set the stage, but they covered way, way too much of that, I thought. Then Undertaker made his entrance, and like what you put here, Michael Cole said it's the most exhilarating experience of WWE, and it's hard to argue with him. The lights went out, and that crowd loved it. It shows you just what kind of phenom, I hate to go back to their term, but that's what he is. He is hot. And then, of course, at the commercial break, Shield makes their entrance for our sixth and final match, Undertaker defeating Dean Ambrose in 4 minutes and 55 seconds. You know, every time that Undertaker seemed to be able to get the edge, the Shield members would climb up on the apron and distract him. In fact, he was about to hit a choke slam, and he hit the choke slam, and then Reigns and Rollins distracted. That allowed Ambrose to recover, hit a low blow, and hit a great DDT. He got the near fall there, and Hunter kicked out, Taker kicked out, and as Ambrose closed in to do his next thing, Taker reached out, grabs him, puts him in the Devil's Gate, and gets him to tap from there. Before we move on to the post-match beating, just quickly, the match itself, like you said, it was a brawl. It's what they should have done, but I thought Ambrose sold like he should have sold for Undertaker. He was a badass, except when he was getting beat up, which is what he needed to do. He sold well for him. It was a 5-minute match, and usually 5-minute matches I kind of yawn at, but for a 5-minute match, I thought it was a good match.
Yeah, they managed to give Ambrose that good near fall. You know, the Undertaker never looked, any way like he was beatable. I mean, you know, he looked dominant throughout the whole thing. you know, the near fall was what it was. It wasn't, you know, I didn't really buy it like you would buy, you know, something at WrestleMania or something with
right.
him and Punk. But, you know, it gave Ambrose that little bright spot in towards the end of the match. And you know, for 5 minutes, I thought it was, you know, pretty good television. I thought the Shield members at ringside made it interesting throughout. So, you know, I don't really have any complaints about it.
And then, of course, from there, the Shield immediately attacked as the bell rang. They jumped on Undertaker. Taker fought back, ends up spilling everybody out to the floor. He's whipping guys all over the place into railings and whatnot. Reigns took a really nasty bump on the barricade. Well, I guess as nasty as it's going to get with those kind of barricades. He took a nice bump there. He had guys all around. And then Seth Rollins climbs up on top of the barricade. Undertaker grabs him or is reaching for him. I can't remember exactly what it was. Either grabbed him or was reaching for him and turned, and just as he got a hold of him, or right as he was about to get a hold of him, that's when Reigns appeared out of nowhere, spears him through the barricade there at the timekeeper's table where Lillian Garcia hit. That Lillian had to bail out at one point because Undertaker whipped, I think it was Rollins, right past her and over the barricade into the crowd. But Reigns hit that surprise spear and knocks Undertaker through the barricade, and at that point they settled into that pack mentality thing that they do. They hit him with a chair a couple of times, then picked him up, did the triple power bomb on the announce table and left him lying there while, let's see, one of them was screaming dead man. You got Rollins and Reigns, both were screaming dead man. And then they were standing over top of him saying, we're the new dogs, we're the hounds of justice. And just, you know, closed out with a great visual of them standing over top of him. I really thought that brawl outside was very well done. Reigns, spear came. I mean, you just didn't see it coming. It came out of nowhere with Rollins in the air at the same time. That's the one thing about these Shield matches and about these Shield spots that I really like is that they're so frenetic. You know, there's just movement on top of movement on top of movement. And Undertaker is getting the best of these guys and showing that, no, I'm Undertaker. I'm the baddest SOB on the planet. But there's just so much movement, so much going on, and then Reigns flies in. It takes a lot to get me to be impressed these days with any of these brawls and attacks that we get. I mean, we see them on TNA with Aces and Eights. They're just kind of your standard beat 'em down thing. Same with Scum and Ring of Honor. With the Shield, they're always flying around the ring in their attacks, and I thought it just worked perfectly.
Yeah, I think one advantage that the Shield has over, like, the Aces and Eights and Scum or something is it's hard to get this kind of activity on the TV screen when you have, like, 20 people out there. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, Scum is just so many people, and Aces and Eights is just so many people that, you know, it kind of just fills up your TV screen. So even if they had half the guys moving around, you still have a lot of static people just standing there. And I think what the Shield manages to accomplish, like you said, is that just people are flying all over the place. It's just utter chaos whenever they have one of these beatdown segments. And they do a very good job of that, making sure that the way that it's shot with the cameras picks up as much of that movement as possible. And I think this is just another good example of that where, you know, you saw the Undertaker toss Reigns into the barricade on the stage side of the ring, and then he quickly moved on to taking out Rollins because Ambrose was still recovering from the Devil's Gate at that point, or whatever. I think that's what we called that move.
Yeah.
Devil's Gate. But, so he grabs him, and he looks like he's about to hit a choke slam because Rollins is standing on top of that barricade, and he turns, and then you see the Undertaker's facial expression. I mean, it just looked like, oh, shit, because he saw Rollins at the last second. And then he plowed through the barricade. It was just really well shot television there, and I think the powerbomb looked great too because they managed to you know, show the Undertaker looking like he was still in kind of a stupor when they had him picked up for the move, and then the announce table crumbled perfectly. So yeah, the whole thing was set up well, and it was one of the you know, more memorable post match beatdowns that we've seen in quite some time.
And you make a good point. A lot of that is WWE. Well, I won't say a lot, but certainly a they, if you go watch a taping, I don't know how many people have been to actual tapings, but they move a lot slower in that arena than it appears they do on television. Go watch, if you, next time you get a chance to go to a Raw or SmackDown taping, go and watch it, and then go back home and watch it when it airs on TV, and don't be surprised if what happens on TV seems to move at a much faster clip, than what they do on TV, or excuse me, what they do in the arena. You know, so that certainly helped here. That's a great way of doing it. And, I hate to say it, but for Undertaker's sake, I'm so happy the table collapsed. When they held him up, that was my biggest fear. I mean, obviously I'd read the spoilers and knew that it had, but just there's that initial tinge after seeing how hard CM Punk crashed onto that table at WrestleMania and whatnot. You're sitting there going, oh God, please break, please break. And then when it broke, it's like, okay, I'm glad it broke.
Yeah, I have the same, fear. I mean, it seems like we've seen a lot of that recently. Where somebody just, you know, hits that table at about, you know, 40 miles an hour, and just, there's no movement at all. And it's got to be a pretty big fear for the wrestlers, too, because, man, that's got to be like hitting concrete out there.
The good news is no Randy Orton doing an RKO, because that table is like, screw you and your RKO. I will not break for an RKO. So at least it was the triple power bomb. And again, a great finish, a great visual. It's going to give the Shield a big lift going forward, especially as they replay it 75,000 times over the next month like they do. It's just, it's going to make those guys look really good. And again, that's the end of the show. And a SmackDown, I think you should sit through for all the good matches that we talked about, the great visual at the end here with this. You know, you can skip the video packages. You can skip the Divas match if you want. You can skip the brief British match if you want, because it's, you know, but don't fast forward too much because it's over in a heartbeat. But yeah, I mean, I think a show worth sitting through from start to finish, and just gloss over the handful of things that don't matter or that you've already seen, and enjoy the rest. Jake, anything you want to add before we get out of here?
I think we covered everything. Everybody just have a good weekend. Enjoy the weather.
Yep, I am doing another wrestling show tonight. If you're in the Charlotte Concord area, we're at the Cabarrus Arena tonight for PWX and Pro Wrestling Evo. That show was headlined by the Ring of Honor World Champion Jay Briscoe defending that title against Corey Hollis, and the PWX champion Caleb Conley defending his title against Mark Briscoe, Jay Briscoe's brother. Should be a great show. The PWX show from the night before, Shenanigans, I believe is on demand right now at highspots.com. So check that out if you haven't already. It may not be available, but I think it is. That was the plan, I know. But actually, yeah, definitely checking all that stuff out. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for your continued support of the .NET site. Jake and I will be back next week with another WWE SmackDown audio review. But until then, go become a .NET member. Get access to all that old audio, all the new audio that will be produced each and every week. And, of course, being able to read things on the ad-free version of the site, talk about it in the .NET member forum, and blog about it in the .NET member blog section. Thank you guys once again, as always, for your support. We will be back next weekend. Until then, everyone, have a great time, and take care.